Hey everyone, welcome to Direct Connect. It's been a hot minute. This is January 2025, and we're in a whole new world. So we wanted to kick off this year with a Direct Connect, and we wanted to talk about one of our favorite topics, and that is security risk management. And this is going to be kind of a first part to a second part that's coming later. But today we want to talk about just the fundamentals of How do you even start? If you don't have anything, if you're not really formally assessing security risks in your organization, where would you start? What would that be? And I'll give you a little hint. We're going to recommend that you consider using the NIST Cybersecurity Framework as a means to get started. And maybe you're already using it, but I think it's a great place to start. It's a way to start asking those risk-like questions about your organization. Some of the questions in this CSF are about, what are you doing with risk? And so that helps you think about that. So I think it's a really good place to start. I have Leonard Chamberlain here with me today. We are always talking about security risk. And talking about the threats and how you measure that and how you look at it. And so we're going to go through this a little bit. And Leonard, one of the things that I have, and I've been doing this for decades now in some way or another, but really as I matured in my career in security, I really started recognizing that risk is really a lot of opinions. It is a qualitative type of approach where, depending on who is looking at the issue, the threats, the circumstances of this particular risk, how they measure it. I don't know if you do you have a similar experience in that way?
Thank you, Stacey. Happy to be here with you today. Risk management is one of my favorite topics. So this is timely. To give you a little bit of background on why it's important to me, during my tenure at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission was when I think it was Executive Order 13636, the one that President Obama originally released that directed NIST to create the cybersecurity framework. That happened while I was a federal employee, and became involved with that project, kind of lead technical representative for the commission and participating with those workshops and supporting NIST in the development of the original version of that framework. It's come a long way, and in the almost 10 years since that initiative, I think it's been 10 years now. But just such a great framework that was developed by participants from all over the spectrum, multiple critical infrastructure industries, domestic as well as international partners, but asset owners, vendors, the whole academia, the whole gamut of potential stakeholders came together to kind of produce this single framework to rule them all as it pertains to risk management. But specific to your question, I think assembling, that core group of stakeholders that can come together and evaluate risk across the myriad of, risk factors, again, whether you use the cybersecurity framework or some other approach, having those different perspectives, a lot of it is opinion-based. It's not like an audit necessarily. Evidence artifacts are certainly an interesting part to review as part of any type of, risk management assessment. But, in the sense of, compliance, where you're looking for definitive demonstration of that compliance, measuring risk is, to your point, very, very much opinion-based.
I think that's, that opinions are important, though. Otherwise, you have kind of a myopic approach to security risk in your organization, and you're going to have a different view. Let's take, for example, the security analyst that's sitting in the cybersecurity team in the IT department. his evaluation of security risk is going to be way different than the CFO that's sitting up in the executive staff talking about financial challenges that the organization might be having, or that new power plant that they're going to start having to build for. They have to put that in more perspective. So that's why I think it's really important that you have those opinions, but somehow you have to bring them into the fold so you have the full view of perspectives. And I think that's where it gets really challenging for a lot of organizations to evaluate risk in their organization, security risk, is because they don't know who has the authority to make the final decision. Who's the top boss that says, okay, my role is to hear all you out, and then, okay, this is going to be our risk position based on everything I heard. And that comes back to some of the things that the NIST CSF points out in their govern category, is that you have that risk assignment. Who's responsible for assessing and determining what your risk tolerances are? What are those risk picture ideals and policies that you want everyone to understand? I think one of the first things that we talk about a lot when we go into these assessments, and I think people that bring us in are kind of surprised by this, when we go, is your organization's mission and vision aligned? Are your security objectives aligned with that security, that mission, and that vision? And that I think kind of says, wait a second, I'm thinking about risk for the organization, not for pure perfect security. And I think that's where I'm getting to the point where that perspective of the cybersecurity analyst is always generally going to be, oh my gosh, we have this vulnerability, it's a high risk, because somebody could possibly do something. And that tends to be that thought process, where it's not really tied to your overall corporate risks, and really ferret that risk priority based on reality of your organization. And I'll leave this with you. I think that a lot of security risks that are identified today are pretty low for an organization, but often get a lot of attention because it sounds sexy. I don't know what you think about that.
It's a lot to
unravel there, huh?
One thing I want to do is tie this back to NERC SIP real quick for our viewers that are in the electric sector. SIP 3 requires the identification of a SIP senior manager, a single person with overall authority and responsibility for leading the execution of the, SIP program for an entity to be compliant with the SIP requirements. SIP is often referred to as very prescriptive requirements, right? And the cybersecurity framework is intended to be non-prescriptive. This is an area where, I think there you can directly see that delta where, and I'll invent a term here, an RSM, risk senior manager, a single person is not identified or required, in any of the govern subcategories. But to your point, having some person or group or somebody identified that does address it is kind of the focus. Not so much the focus on that single person, although I think there is benefit to having that singular authority that ensures that vision is executed. Again, whether it's mission or vision, it all kind of rolls up to that, and getting that on paper. Having those attributes documented so that, all of the, not only, business specific processes and procedures, but the risk management overlay, all ultimately supports that mission and vision.
Yeah, I think it's always come back to this. I see these different risk assessment processes within organizations where they're doing it independently. You have operational risks being managed over here in the operations side. You have, these enterprise risks that are being managed by executives where they're dealing with financial situations. And then you have security departments, security and, the cyber and the physical people doing their own risks. But tying all those together, and I always use a triangle. I guess I want to, I don't know how to get that angle right. There you go. Not this. Anyway, I always thought it was a triangle, right? That the R is in the middle of the triangle. That's your real corporate risk. But it has input from operations, has input from your enterprise, and it has input from your security teams, where you're really taking it all into one fold and really trying to balance that. And I think that's the why I get excited about NIST CSF 2.0, because it gives me a uniform method in order to ask the right questions that can lead me to understanding what my risks are. And then I can start working on what are those threats and trying to get that real reality set in to what am I looking at here? And that way I can start prioritizing my security objectives accordingly to what aligns to the mission and vision of my organization and, you know, where I sit in the, or, you know, critical infrastructure is easy because we're dealing with some really big stuff, right? In the electric sector in particular, we've been very focused on keeping the lights on. And that gives us a mission. I doubt if there's any electric utility out there that doesn't have a mission to keep the lights on. That would be crazy. But so we kind of know what that is in generally in the electric sector. But if we talk about other critical infrastructures like oil and gas, it may be a little bit more nebulous. Water, wastewater, maybe they understand that a little bit better. But still just being able to utilize some tool in order to get you started on figuring out what those risks are is such an advantage. And I guess to me, I didn't have the wake-up call. I knew about the CSF since its beginning of time, but it wasn't until 2.0 came out that I really started, a light bulb came on and said, oh my gosh, this is a really great way of communicating security across these different disciplines within your organization. You can start normalizing your taxonomy. Is that a word? No, that's not a word.
Taxonomy, yes.
Where did I get that? Anyway, your lexicon of communication. So we're all talking the same thing, and we can really point to something that gives us examples of what good looks like. And we can measure ourselves against what good looks like and kind of try to feel out where we are on that maturity level cycle and use that as a tool to be able to build out our risk program. I think, Leonard, one thing that I do find often, utilities try to move too fast. They do this with internal controls too, right? They try to eat the elephant all in one bite, and instead of looking at it as a journey, and I think that journey really needs to be slow and deliberate. And that's another thing I like about NIST CSF is that it gives me that framework where I can take bite-sized approach to evaluating my organization. I don't have to eat that whole elephant at one time. I can start with the govern category, get down to the subcategories as I can, and really focus on that before I move on into anything else. Obviously, it's going to be different for every different utility, but I really enjoy that part of it and making things more actionable based on those examples. And to me, it's a way to really help get from nothing to something, or get from too much and I'm not getting anywhere to be able to backstep and say, okay, let's relook at security risk in our organization and how can we really do this right. And I think NIST CSF is the way to maybe do that for most organizations, especially in our sector.
Not to disagree with you, but obviously I think the industry, the electric sector industry as a whole is actually a very slow moving industry, very set in, the design of the grid. And, while the equipment, and processes that go around managing the grid have obviously matured greatly over the last couple decades, at its core, the design of the grid hasn't changed much in, over 100 years. I heard a joke one time that the primary choice of suicide by people in the electric sector is to lay down in front of a glacier and wait for that to crush them, because that's how quick things move. But you know, certainly I think to your point, you know, when there is a project, subject matter experts that I've worked with across the industry, certainly appreciate the opportunity to, you know, address their operational risk, their security risk, anything that helps improve their work-life balance. Because in a lot of cases, they're working long hours already. That's in non-storm, non-emergency situations. And then, you know, plus compliance on top of their day jobs creates an untenable expectation of level of effort in some cases. But what's interesting is kind of you were mentioning some of the other sectors, oil and natural gas and water, and comparing those to the electric sector, where the electric sector's had mandatory requirements for, you know, a number of years now, and these other sectors not so much. Seeing the delta in, you know, security postures, you know, within various organizations is really interesting to see. Having come from the electric sector, it really, you know, kind of goes back to that first conversation we had about risk being opinion based, and ensuring that you have the right stakeholders in the room to have these conversations. You know, if you're still debating about the impact, you know, a computer virus can have on water, you know, because it's water and not a computer, then that's not probably not the right person that you need to be having in the room for those discussions. At a minimum, it illustrates an opportunity, a huge opportunity to educate, you know, the workforce, as it were, on some of these new concepts. Well, not new concepts, but new concepts to their industry that they need to be aware of.
I think that's a good point, and I'll put a little context on my going too fast, eating the elephant all at one time. I think that's usually in the aspect of somebody coming into an organization, taking on that security role and wanting to improve their organization by implementing a risk management solution, they often start that process by taking on too much, and instead of slowly rolling that out, and they wonder why do my bosses and the rest of the organization not buy into this? Well, generally, from my experience, they didn't buy into it because they don't even understand what you're trying to accomplish, and you're just dumping so much on them, it's too much to absorb. Yeah. So that's my kind of take is the framework really gives me a method by which to slow down and do it methodically and look at it as a journey, not as a, I got 3 months to get this done.
Completely agree. I mean, we've seen that numerous times, not just trying to communicate these concepts to the C-suite, but also, you know, just going out and buying a tool, thinking this tool is going to fix everything. Yeah. And then you've got no plan in place to leverage it, no trained workforce to use it. You know, just a mess of a situation a lot of times.
One thing I wanted to do is tee up our part two to this, which hopefully we have a great guest. I'm not going to announce it for right now, but we'll announce later maybe. Somebody that has lived and breathed NIST CSF and security risk assessments his entire career, and we're going to move into that space on some lessons learned that he had over the time, and that might be relevant to tools. Bringing in a tool that you hope will solve your all your problems, and really realizing that it can be helpful, but it needs to be managed, and that's a big deal with any tool that you bring in, and especially when you're dealing with risk tools. That's what they are. They're a tool. They're not the solution. They're a tool, and so that's what we hope be talking more with our special guest coming up in the future here. But in the meantime, I just wanted to start the conversation about NIST CSF as a great starting point. I think we covered that, and give everybody the emphasis to go take a look at that framework. Think of it as a risk starter tool, something that you can use to really evaluate where you are in your security journey and where that those risks reside, and just pay attention to the different questions that ask. It asks some really tough questions in there. The examples are great, and they make you think beyond your just typical patch management and you know, log management solutions. They really get into pure security programs that make you whole. And so I'd really advise everyone, go take a look at NIST CSF 2.0, and I think you'll be happily surprised. And it'll help you in your journey. Thank you, everyone. See you soon.
Not only is Direct Connect available to listen to, you can also watch each episode on our YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/@ArcherU. If you're interested in who we are and what we do, you can head on over to our website at archerint.com. You can also follow us on our social media platforms, Archer International on Facebook, Archer Energy Solutions LLC on LinkedIn, and at @ArcherSEC on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and check back every other week for brand new episodes of Direct Connect.